we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatments of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, April the 15th, 2016. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I'm joined here today by our guest co-host, Darren Chang.
Hello.
And Beck Wenders.
Hi there.
Welcome, everyone. Today's show is all about changing laws for the animals. You may have heard us report on the show a few months ago about New Zealand recently declaring all animals as being sentient. This law was enacted earlier this year, and Dr. Virginia Williams, who was the chair of the National Animal Ethics Advisory Committee in New Zealand at the time, will be here on the show today to tell us about this new law and how it will affect the animals. Then we have a feature interview with Canadian Member of Parliament, Nathaniel Erskine-Smith. He is the MP who introduced the Private Members Bill C-246 into the House of Commons this February with the intention of bringing animal welfare laws in Canada into the 21st century, as he says. This bill, also called the Modernizing Animal Protections Act, proposes to amend the Criminal Code to consolidate and modernize various offenses against animals. Nathaniel will be here today to tell us about the bill and what Canadians need to know in order to have this legislation approved and passed. That interview is coming up in about 30 minutes, so please do stay tuned for that. So we are now on day two of the annual Spring Member Drive here at Vancouver Cooperative Radio. We are an all-volunteer run and listener-supported community radio station. So what does that mean? Well, what that means is that we provide unique programming on our airwaves that you won't be finding anywhere else. We give a voice to marginalized communities that would not otherwise be adequately represented in the mainstream media. And we do not play commercials. I really feel that there's a need for this kind of animal advocacy. It's through media, it's through radio, it's through podcasting. And we have the opportunity here at Co-op Radio via the show Animal Voices to get so many important voices and messages for the animals out in the world. Now, Darren and Beck, you're both very involved in the animal advocacy movement yourself. I'm wondering if you could both describe what does animal advocacy mean to you? And then why do you think it's important to give that voice for the animals via Animal Voices and the radio show?
Beck, do you have any thoughts on this?
To me, it means kind of inspiring a more serious critique of the status quo through action and creative problem solving. And it's not always necessarily asking for permission, but doing what is right, even if it goes against the grain. And to me also, animal rights means a more committed relationship to animals and their well-being, as well as challenging the ethic of breeding for consumption or entertainment or other forms of oppression for animals.
What about you, Darren?
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And I think on top of that, I would add, for me, it's all about, I mean, we live in a society where people are so alienated from so many different species of animals. And I think just constantly bringing attention to their existence and amplifying their voices and giving space to the animals, whether it's through media or through any sort of like advocacy, on the street advocacy or anything like that. Just kind of bringing more animals into people's lives in a world where we hardly ever see them anymore.
Absolutely. And I think that there are many forms of animal advocacy, right? And we'll be learning about that at Animal Advocacy Camp next month, right,
yep.
Darren, which you're organizing. And we've talked about this on the show before. I think it's so important as someone who wants to advocate for the animals to find your niche, to do what speaks to you, to to share your talents and your skills. For myself, I'm all about communication, and I love broadcasting. I went to school for broadcasting, and I've been doing radio for many, many years, and I had always wanted to do an animal rights show after I left my university radio station in the 90s. And when this opportunity came up for me, I guess it was, it's been just over 6 or 7 years now, I took it, because this is what speaks to me. This is how I can best make my impact in the world, I feel, to share all this information and spread the messages of animal advocacy and animal rights stories. Also, part of the show's mandate is to inspire and rally the community to get into action. We are a show that focuses on activism, and that is acting and using your voice and your actions for the animals. And we're community focused. Every time that there's something happening locally here in Vancouver specifically, we share that. So there, for example, there's Animal Advocacy Camp coming up, and we'll be talking about that on the show later today and in future shows. We're a sponsor of this event, which is Vancouver's Animal Rights Conference, you could say, every 2 years, right?
It used to be every year, but
yeah,
we skipped
every
one year.
Okay.
Last
year. Yeah, okay. So we're involved with that, and everyone, I would say, who has guest co-hosted or hosted or produced on the show, we're all activists in our own right, not just on the show, but we are involved in other stuff as well in the community. We are really community focused here, and I think that's a really great reason to support this community-based radio station. I think that's so important. I wonder if you two could speak on why it is important to rally community, and especially through the medium of radio and podcasting.
Well, I think particularly, again, it goes back to the kind of society we're living in right now, where we're all so individualized and disconnected from one another. And a lot of times we all feel in the face of, you know, really challenging issues like animal advocacy, you know, where so many animals are being exploited and dominated. Sometimes we all feel really powerless, like there isn't anything we can do to change, make the world a better place for them. And I think that's where community is so important when it comes in. I mean, as a community, when we know that it's not just us feeling this way, that there's so many people who are sharing these similar, you know, ideas, and we all have similar goals we want to achieve, we can really work to empower each other.
I think that's the power of podcasts as well, because our show is available on our website, animalvoices.org, and on iTunes as well. So it is, well, we are, like I said, we're community focused with Vancouver, but we also spread globally. Like today we're talking about issues happening in New Zealand, right? And all across Canada. And so what you said there made me think, I've heard so many people say that the way that they find their community is by listening to podcasts, because there might not be any animal rights movement where they are in their, you know, isolated little town in Midwestern USA, like where my sister lives. But I think she gets a lot from this podcast, because it can inspire her. It's like, you know, there's a voice in your living room or in your earbuds, and it's definitely inspiration. So I need to wrap up here. That we could talk about this more, but we at Animal Voices, we need to raise $1,000 a year to keep the show on the air. And for that, we need donations in the form of memberships. Darian and Beck, are you members, or would you like to be?
I'm actually not a member, but I really want to be.
Because of our spiel here, right?
I would love to find out how to become a member.
Okay. So if you find this show to be important, useful, and needed, this is the time now to show your financial support if you can by making a donation in any amount. It's tax deductible, and we are a registered charity. So if you live in Canada, you'll get a tax receipt. So our favorite types of memberships are monthly sustaining memberships, and that means you get a small amount or a large amount taken out of your bank account every month. I get $5 taken out. I don't even feel that $5. It's really insignificant to me, but it means a lot to the station, because the station then knows that they're having a regular amount of income coming into the station every month to keep it going long. Or you can make an annual donation. So please go to coopradio.org and click on Make a Donation at the top to make a donation. You can also give us a call after the show at 1 o'clock at 604-684-8494, and I will personally answer your phone call. 604-684-8494. We're a bit busy during the show, but afterwards at one I can answer. Or just go to coopradio.org and click on Make a Donation. And we thank you in advance for your support.
All right, we've got some events for you. first event is a vegan bake sale for Small Animal Rescue Society. It is tomorrow, the 16th of April, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Korna, K-O-R-N-A, Natural Pet Supplies at 1174 Marine Drive in North Vancouver. Buy delicious homemade vegan cookies, cupcakes, and more to help animals in need. For this bake sale, coinciding with Worldwide Vegan Bake Sale, all money raised will go to the Small Animal Rescue Society of BC and the veterinary care of the rabbits, guinea pigs, rats, hedgehogs, mice, degus, and other small furries.
And also tomorrow from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Ryerson United Church, 2195 West 45th Avenue, there is a fundraiser for Huggable Pitbull Rescue Association, and the Cranky Moloks, a local band, will be performing there, and their goal is to get at least 100 people in attendance, so please go support them if you can. And lastly, today, Friday, is the last day for early bird ticket sales for the Vancouver Animal Advocacy Camp, which is happening from May 21st to 22nd. So get your early bird tickets today. It's a great deal. Don't miss out on this opportunity.
What are some of the speakers that we can expect there, Darren?
Oh, we got a great lineup of speakers this year. Anita Kreins, who is the founder of Toronto Pig Save, will be one of the keynote speakers. Many people have probably seen videos of what Toronto Pig Save have been doing outside slaughterhouses or stopping slaughterhouse trucks and just bearing witness to the suffering of animals. We also have Lauren Ornelas from Food Empowerment Project, who will be there to talk about farm worker solidarity, which is such an important issue, connecting the human struggle with animal exploitation. And we got local activists as well. Tommy Knowles from Wildlife Defense League will be giving a presentation about the work that they've been working on in the field, defending BC wildlife, particularly the wolves and the bears. And
it's animaladvocacycamp.ca, is that correct?
It's, because animaladvocacycamp2016.weebly.com, and that's the website.
Okay. Yep. So you can check out all the speaker lineup there. And just, I don't know if you mentioned the price of early bird tickets. It's a great price.
Right.
What is it?
$25 for one day and $40 for both days, and that covers everything.
Including your breakfast and lunch on both days. Yeah, yep. For sure. Yes.
I am definitely getting my tickets today.
We're all going, yeah. And so if you have an animal-friendly event that you would like to have announced on the show, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post it on our Facebook page at Animal Voices Vancouver.
It's Co-op Radio's birthday.
Not as big as 40 like last year, but just as much fun.
Thursday, April 21st at the Wise Hall.
Join us for a night of music.
Doors open at 7:30.
Open mic at 8 p.m.
Then two bands.
Viper Central with Kathleen Nisbet and Red Herring, a reboot of 80s art house faves.
Reggae and Caribbean DJs to end the night.
$10 at the door or in advance.
Co-op Radio's annual birthday bash, April 21st.
Come down to Commercial Drive in Grandview on April 24th to take part in Vancouver's annual Earth Day Parade and celebration. After meeting at 1 o'clock, we'll be marching down Commercial Drive to Grandview Park, where there will be music, booths, games, and food. This is a family-friendly event in its sixth year, run by students at Windermere Secondary School. For more information on speakers, the schedule, and how to get involved, go to www.earthdayparade.ca. So come on down on April 24th at 1 p.m. for a day of laughing, fun, and standing up for Mother Earth.
For our first interview today, we have Dr. Virginia Williams on the show. She was the chair of the National Animal Ethics Advisory Committee in New Zealand when the country's government was in the process of developing and passing the Animal Welfare Amendment Act, which just came out into force a few months ago. This new law for New Zealand declares all animals as sentient beings, and she is here today to tell us about the act and what it will now mean for the animals and humans of New Zealand and abroad. Hello, Dr. Williams, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Oh, hello. It's very nice to be here.
Well, thank you for coming on the show today to tell us about the new Animal Welfare Amendment Act in New Zealand.
This act was introduced into Parliament in 2013 and passed last year. Can you tell us to start what the Animal Welfare Act was like before this year? And now, how has it changed with the new declaration of animals as sentient beings?
Well, last year's amendment was to the relatively recent Animal Welfare Act, which was passed in 1999. And the major difference between that and the previous Animals Protection Act was that rather than telling people what they shouldn't do to animals, it told them what they should do. So rather than focusing on preventing cruelty, it imposed a duty of care to ensure that animals have their needs met, you know, in terms of food and water, shelter, behaviour, handling and keeping them well, etc. So it was already relatively progressive legislation at the time it was introduced, with that focus on looking after animals as opposed to not mistreating them. As far as the issue of sentience is concerned, it's really just an explicit statement of something that's self-evident to most people, at least, that animals feel pain and distress. But that doesn't mean that the explicitness is not significant now that it's within the legislation. I'm sure you know that the issue of animal sentience was one that World Animal Protection campaigned for many years. Although many nations recognise sentience implicitly, there's only 6 or 7 countries in the world, including New Zealand, that explicitly recognise it within legislation. And the significance of explicitly acknowledging that animals are indeed sentient is that we're saying we know animals are not just things or property, but beings that feel pain and distress. So we have a greater responsibility to do what we can to minimise that.
Well, can you tell us what the process was like in developing the Act? And do you know what the impetus was to even initiate it? Is New Zealand striving to be progressive for the animals in terms of how it formally views them and treats them?
Well, so the previous legislation had been in for over a decade, and that's enough time to recognise what was and what wasn't working. And as you know, things move onward in the animal welfare sphere. Opinions change and things like that. One of the major problems that we were having was in the enforcement of the Act, in that in terms of prosecution of offenders, the cost of taking a case through the courts often precluded the decision from being taken. So what the amendment has done, or is still in the process of doing, is to introduce a set of regulations which, if breached, can result in instant fines without the need to go through the courts. And it's not that we have a whole lot of people not complying with the legislation. Most are willing and able to comply, or at least do their best. But there will always be those who don't or won't comply, and these are the ones that we need to be able to penalise more readily. In terms of being progressive, I think New Zealand has been progressive. I think the 1999 Act was groundbreaking at the time. I think the recognition of sentience is progressive. We have some world-leading animal researchers here who've provided good evidence for many of the changes that have been introduced, and some top people within the Ministry for Primary Industries have been at the forefront of change. I'm thinking particularly here of the late Dr. David Babel, who was instrumental in getting animal welfare included within the remit of the OIE and chaired the OIE Animal Welfare Working Group for many years from its inception. And New Zealand is also one of only 4 countries, the others being the UK, Switzerland and Austria, that are graded A on a scale of A to G under the World Animal Protection's Animal Welfare Index. So I do think that we've actually been leaders to a certain extent.
That's all very interesting. And now I'm wondering, during the process of developing this Act, was there any opposition to it?
Not particularly opposition to amending the Act as such. Really, people from all sides were happy for that to happen. I mean, there was certainly a lot of lobbying, but that came from both sides, like from the animal rights groups and animal welfare groups and the Veterinary Association and farmers and many private citizens as well. And I know that there was frustration within the people who were trying to enforce the Act, both within the Ministry and within the RNZSPCA, who also have inspectors, that many lesser offenders were getting off simply with a warning. But one of the things that New Zealand does do well is they consult widely on issues like this, so everything is always consulted widely, and so everybody in the country if they want to, has a chance to have their say. And you're never going to please everybody. It's going to be somewhere in the middle.
Well, it sounds very democratic. A significant change in the act is that research and testing on animals for cosmetics has now been banned, and that's huge. Can you tell us about this and how it came to be put into the Amendment Act?
Well, it's not quite as huge as it sounds, although it is absolutely significant, because we weren't actually doing any cosmetic testing. New Zealand has never tested cosmetics on animals. We don't have have that kind of an industry. But in terms of significance and symbolism, it is big. It was largely driven by animal rights groups and the Green Party, but it did have wider support. But I have to say that I was the chair of the National Animal Ethics Advisory Committee at the time, and I would have thought, certainly my opinion, that if some research came before an animal ethics committee, it would not have been passed because the cost-benefit just would not stack up in terms of our legislation. It's a little bit similar. New Zealand doesn't use the law against using great apes for research here, but we never did that either anyway. So there's a certain amount of symbolism in that, but they are important lines in the sand, I suppose.
Okay, so we know that the Animal Welfare Amendment Act, it declares animals sentient. It now bans testing for cosmetics, but it states that it still allows hunting and killing of wild animals, and it doesn't say much about farmed animals. So what is the intention towards wild and farmed animals with regards to them too now being recognized as being sentient?
Okay, so in terms of hunting, this is a major pastime and food gathering exercise in New Zealand, as I imagine it is in Canada. And while the previous legislation was relatively quiet on hunting wild animals, the amendment specifically outlaws willful or reckless ill-treatment during that activity. So that is a change. There's always been the provision that if a wild animal is captured but not killed, then the normal provisions of the Act in terms of the duty of care and the way they need to be looked after in the same way as any other animals. So there is a change there, it's certainly not outlawing hunting in that way. In terms of farmed animals, the Act covers all animals that are under human control. So in New Zealand, our definition of an animal runs from a mammal to a crab and a crayfish. And so these animals are all regarded as sentient. And so how we deal with that is that the National Animal Welfare Advisory Committee develops codes of welfare for the individual species. And these set minimum standards and recommended best practice for the treatment, covering such things as stockmanship, food and water, shade and shelter, housing and facilities, all these kind of things, health and disease, emergency humane destruction. So although those minimum standards have not been enforceable, because they could only be used as evidence in a court case, many of those have now been lifted to become regulations under the amended Act. So that will make the prosecution of offenders much easier. So the farm animals really are covered in the same way as companion animals. There are codes of welfare for companion animals, but all the individual species of farm animals as well.
Well, we do have a similar proposed law in Canada. It's called the Animal Charter of Rights and Freedoms. We are also calling for the recognition of animals as sentient beings. And as you mentioned before, there are several other countries who have already achieved this recognition. Can you comment on the importance of countries such as New Zealand, Canada, India, France, and Austria taking these steps forward and perhaps setting precedents for other countries to follow?
I think it will be a natural progression as the research piles up and people become more aware of where their food comes from. I mean, I think that there's a growing awareness of animals as sentient beings. It doesn't seem that long ago that people didn't think that they could feel pain, and I mean, we've come an awful long way since then. You know, and some countries, I mean, for some countries indeed, and there's a side of New Zealand that has this too. There's a pragmatism about it, that countries that export animal products are aware that their reputations are on the line if their animal welfare standards are not up to scratch. But I do think as the generations come through, there's a greater empathy with animals, and I'm sure it's going to go that way when you see the improvements that have been made in animal welfare standards in a lot of countries. Doesn't mean to say there's not still a lot of horrible stuff that goes on, but there has certainly been a shift.
Right. So this definitely is a shift, and as you mentioned, there's still a lot of horrible stuff going on to animals, and I feel like it is a progression, but that there is so much more room for improvement, but it's starting to happen. So I'm wondering, what would you predict or see as next steps in the future for continued improvement in the way that humans regard and treat animals and use their legislation to enact these beliefs into action?
It's
a tough one.
Well, there's certainly clear evidence that animals feel pain and distress. I do not think that can be disputed. And I also think it's a measure of a country's humanity that animals are treated with appropriate care. And I think as countries lift their standards of living and start looking at how animals are treated, that these things will gradually change. I don't think it's going to happen overnight. Like, there are so many countries in the world where people are struggling to just survive. And I guess their focus is on themselves, and the animals will probably take second place. But we need to improve the standards of living for people, so that they can start taking care of their animals as well. Really, it's a difficult one. But I see the progress that we've made in the last, 25 years or so, and we're streets ahead of where we were. So I can't see that it's ever that's going to stop. Gradual improvement is definitely the way to go, without trying to impose too high standards that nobody can attain. And we just have to move slowly towards them.
Well, thank you for coming on the show today, Dr. Williams, to speak about the new law in New Zealand that declares all animals as being sentient. I appreciate your time and have a good day.
Thank you very much, Alison.
And now we have some news for our listeners. This week, 5 animal cruelty charges were filed against Michael Hackenberger, the notorious owner of Bowmanville Zoo in Ontario. The cruelty charges follow the release of hidden footage obtained by PETA showing Hackenberger viciously and repeatedly whipping a restrained tiger while bragging about it. The video is really difficult to watch. And as of yesterday, Hackenberger has officially stepped down as the director of the zoo, even though he maintains that he is not guilty of the charges. This has generated a lot of conversation on social media. A lot of people have came to the defense of other zoos using hashtag not all zoos. But
yes, all zoos.
Yes, all zoos. That's right. And this is a great opportunity to generate a lot of critical conversation around whether zoos should even be existing and keeping wild animals in captivity just to exploit them.
And a more happy news story. In Italy, La Stampa Chronicles reports that the first vegan kindergarten in Italy has recently opened its doors. It's called Nature School in Milan, and their mandate is as follows. We love and respect all animals, so we do not use any food originated from their exploitation, not only meat and fish, but also eggs, dairy, and honey. How cute is that? And in addition to serving 100% vegan meals, their curriculum is focused on environmental issues and students learn about recycling. So basically little superheroes in the making. And just another leading animal rights story from Italy, where it seems that vegan philosophies are increasingly being seriously considered. Another happy story, this time from New Zealand. Inky the octopus... yes, his name is Inky, has made a great escape. Inky slipped through a gap left by maintenance workers at the New Zealand National Aquarium. And he slipped through a gap left by maintenance workers at the top of his enclosure, and as evidenced by his tracks, made his way across the floor to a 6-inch wide drain. He squeezed his football-sized body in and made a break for the Pacific. So hopefully he is happily swimming in the Pacific Oceans right now, away from spectators and being used to generate money. So that's another...
That's so awesome. I mean, that kind of just goes back to the first story. It shows that animals really don't want to be held captive in zoos and aquariums.
Really?
And a hyper-intelligent animal such as an octopus. I think there's been multiple stories of this happening. This is just the recent one.
Mm-hmm. Well, I actually did an interview about octopuses a couple of years ago and on the show, if people want to check that out. And I learned a lot about them. There's been numerous octopus escapes, but I think this is the first one I've ever heard of where the octopus actually got away.
Made it.
He knew where to go, because I'm like, how did he get into the ocean? He went down the drain that goes straight into the ocean.
Yeah.
Like, he knew.
So smart.
So when we hear about animal attempts at escaping, which I see all the time online, they always get caught again, right? And this was actually a happy story, and it's certainly making its rounds on the internet, right? Because, and here we are sharing it as well, because it's actually a story of triumph, and I hope that people will recognize that and convey the triumph of this one animal to all the other ones who try to escape and want to escape, right?
And I think to me, it just shows like this is one of those instances where as human activists who are looking to help animals, we can really use stories like this to get inspired and really sort of understand that, you know, if the animals are always fighting so hard for their own lives, you know, we could step up too and help them a little bit more.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for the news there. You are listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM, CFRO Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And don't forget, it's our biannual spring member drive. So if you want to support Animal Voices, please go on to cooperadio.org and click on make a donation at the top there. We'll really appreciate it. For our feature interview today, we have Member of Parliament Nathaniel Erskine-Smith on the show. You may have heard about Bill C-246, otherwise known as the Modernizing Animal Protections Act, which was introduced by Nathaniel into our Canadian Parliament as a private member's bill 2 months ago, with the goal of bringing our animal welfare laws into the 21st century, as he says. Nathaniel is here today to tell us all about this important bill for Canada, how Canadians can participate, and what it will mean for the animals if it is passed. Hello, Nathaniel, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Hi.
Thank you for coming on the show today to speak to us about Bill 246. You were the MP who introduced the bill into Parliament. Can you tell us, to start, why you initiated it, and what is missing now from our Canadian legislature that this act will improve upon if passed?
So this issue is personal to me, but it's also an issue that matters a lot to my riding. So it's been covered in the media at this point. I myself am vegan. I was raised vegetarian. I've long cared about animal welfare. But beyond that, my riding of Beaches East York, also the issue matters a great deal to my constituents. I would also say that I'm interested in issues that cross partisan lines, and I don't think you have to be a liberal to care about animal welfare. I don't think you have to be a member of one political party or the other, or one occupation. People across the political spectrum, and you know, whether you're a farmer or a pet owner, Canadians care about animal welfare.
Wow, that's really impressive. I didn't know you were vegan, so that just makes this even like more impressive to me. So thank you for like taking forth in this and initiating this. People are calling you a rookie MP when it's reported in the news, but you are making, this could possibly make so much change for the animals in Canada. So thank you for doing that. So I'd like to talk about the main changes to our laws that this bill proposes. To start, it calls for a ban on the importation of shark fins. Now, this is a big one because this proposed law was already defeated just a few years ago in Parliament, when MP Finn Donnelly tried to bring it forth and it was narrowly voted down. Can you give us some background on the shark fin issue in Canada and who supports the ban and who doesn't?
Okay, so there's, I want to say a long history, but it's actually over a relatively short period of time, all things considered. In 2011, municipalities started to ban the sale and consumption of shark fins. Toronto, Calgary, a number of municipalities across Canada. Unfortunately, a court decided in 2012 that the ban was unconstitutional. In fact, this was up to the federal legislature to take action. And Finn Donnelly attempted to do so in 2013. Unfortunately, with a conservative government, it was narrowly defeated. I've brought this back. I've spoken to Finn Donnelly about introducing this bill and had his support in terms of reintroducing this particular piece of the legislation. And it is important because while we have banned the practice of shark finning within Canada since 1994, we're complicit in the practice internationally. And so 300,000 pounds, more than 300,000 pounds, I should say, of shark fins are imported into Canada every year. And this is a major consequences to sharks around the world. So 100 million sharks are killed on an annual basis, according to organizations that follow this issue. And more than 70 million of those sharks are killed specifically for their fins. And it's obviously a cruel practice, cutting off a shark's fin while it's still alive and throwing it back into the ocean.
Well, some people are calling this proposed bill an attack on Chinese culture. What do you say to that?
Well, I think that's an unfortunate way of framing the issue, I think. For example, we had Toronto City Councillor Kristen Wong Tam join us on March 2nd to support the bill. She actually was one of the leaders to bring the original ban at Toronto City Council. She obviously is of Chinese background and has been active in her Chinese community. So too, when you look around the world to the United States, just as an example, we see Chinese-American senators in Hawaii, in California. They're, in fact, the ones that are leading the charge. And there's a divide, too, I would say, even when you look at generational divide within the Chinese community, because certainly younger Canadian Chinese are supportive of the ban. And even there's a divide, as you know, if you were to poll the majority of Chinese Canadians, a majority of Chinese Canadians would be supportive of the importation ban.
Well, Darren has a question for you here. Go ahead, Darren.
Yeah, thank you, Nathaniel, for that answer. Actually, as someone who is of a Chinese descent myself and is an animal rights activist, I think that is so true that so there are so many, especially Chinese youth and younger generations who are starting to change our own culture for the better for the animals. But my question is, another main goal of the act is to ban the sale of dog and cat fur in Canada and to enable labeling laws in this area. What should our listeners know with regards to selling fur in Canada at this time and the lack of labeling laws that this bill would change?
Yeah, so thanks for the question. It's bizarre here in Canada, we don't have labeling laws with respect to fur. And so while some companies, take Canada Goose as an example, they do say that their fur comes from coyote, a lot of companies don't. And other countries like the U.S. have rules put in place to make sure that labeling is required. And this bill would, one, it would ban the sale of cat and dog fur, but two, and more importantly, because that's only one piece of the issue, more importantly, as a matter of consumer choice and people knowing where the fur comes from and knowing in many ways what the practices are with respect to those that fur, they'll see the source fur on the material.
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually had a personal experience with that, walking into Winners sometime last year and actually coming across real dog fur that was labeled as fake fur. And it was just so troubling because so many consumers just have no idea. So a third change that this bill proposes is to strengthen the criminal code for certain animal cruelties and to close existing loopholes. Can you explain what is meant by this?
Sure. So the bill does a few things with respect to the criminal code. I should say this part of the bill was originally drafted by the Justice Department in 1999. It was originally a Liberal government bill back in the day. Unfortunately, it went through a number of iterations, came very close to passing in 2002, 2003, and unfortunately died on the order paper, but specifically closes loopholes relating to animal fighting, number one. For example, it's not currently a crime to profit from animal fighting. It's not currently a crime to train dogs or animals for animal fighting. And the Humane Societies and SPCAs have told me that this is a problem because it's very rare that you actually catch individuals in the act of fighting animals. And so you need to, in fact, criminalize ancillary activities. So in this case, profiting from animal fighting will now become a crime. Training animals to fight will be a crime. And, in fact, transporting animals to a fight will, for the purposes of fighting will also be a crime.
Can you speak a little bit about how this law proposes to change the definition of bestiality, just because this actually came up in court this past year, and so you want to change that so that next time these problems that happened with it don't happen again?
Yeah, so that's another loophole that is being closed with respect to this bill, if it's successful, that the BC Court of Appeal found that bestiality requires penetration, which any reasonable person no one's taking issue with that part of the bill, just put it that way. They've all said, well, that's bizarre. Why is that the case? And in fact, the BC Court of Appeals said, our hands are bound by the text of the legislation, the historical interpretation of this legislation. It's up to the legislature to change this. And so that's what I'm trying to do, and making the definition of bestiality what every person, I think, already understands it to be, which is sexual conduct between an animal and a human being.
Well, I love that you are proposing to close all these loopholes. You've taken a look at what has happened in the past, and you're trying to make amends to that. So there's a lot of opposition actually coming from conservative constituents towards many parts of this bill, and concerns have been strongly brought up by conservative MPs such as Robert Sopuck from Manitoba, who has expressed that the terms of the bill are so broad that they could place all animal use in legal jeopardy. That's what he said, and that such a step could have drastic implications for communities who rely on farming, hunting, trapping, commercial fishing, and angling, as well as medical researchers. So what is your response to these concerns, and how have you been handling the fear-mongering?
So it's funny, I met with Mr. Sopuck before I introduced the bill to explain what I was trying to do and to ask him if he has specific issues with it to let me know, and I would try to incorporate those concerns into the legislation. He came back with the same concerns generally, but wouldn't point to any specific provision of the bill. And in fact, when it was first introduced by the Liberal government, it went through committee in the House of Commons. It went through committee study, expert testimony. There was testimony from the Ontario Fishers, Anglers, and Hunters. There was testimony from the Poultry Welfare Association. There was testimony from all these agricultural associations. And they all hired real lawyers, respected lawyers, and those lawyers made submissions. And I actually went back to that committee hearing in 2003, and I incorporated their submissions into my legislation. So I was surprised when these same groups came out fighting my piece of legislation, and I've asked them specifically what they would like to see changed, and they have not been able to come back with any specific changes. So if they do come back with specific changes that are reasonable, I will, of course, incorporate them into my legislation. My aim is not to stop farming, hunting, trapping, commercial fishing, and angling. I recognize a number of people, some of your listeners may want that to be the case, but the fact of the matter is, the criminal code is simply not the tool to use to stop such practices or to regulate such practices. And, you know, Bob Sopuck said our current animal cruelty statutes are good and provide the authorities with all the necessary tools that are required. Unfortunately, that's simply not the case. The Humane Societies and the SPCAs, i.e. the authorities, they've come and said, no, we don't have the tools we need, and they're supportive of this legislation in order to give them the tools. And I'll just give you one example, that this bill, one of the other loopholes that it closes, right now, in order to obtain a successful prosecution under the criminal code, because we already have animal cruelty offenses under the code, you have to prove that someone was willfully neglectful of an animal that caused, and that willful neglect caused unnecessary pain or suffering. And that willful piece can be very difficult to prove, that someone intentionally neglected an animal. And what this would change is it would change it to a standard across the criminal code, gross negligence. Now, Mr. Sopuck's come out and said, well, someone's clumsy or incompetent, it will be criminalized. Any criminal lawyer will tell you that's not the case. Gross negligence is a very high standard. But what it does do is it ensures that where someone causes unnecessary pain and suffering to an animal by conduct that departs in a significant way from what one would reasonably expect, that will be criminal conduct.
So just getting back to the fear-mongering, it's been called also that this is a radical animal rights agenda from what you've just said. I think you've clearly put it out there that it's not, but how do you respond to that kind of statement it must be frustrating.
It is frustrating. I mean, I was a little bit naive, I think, in introducing the legislation, thinking that I was picking three pretty motherhood and apple pie sort of issues where, you know, 81, when the bill was going through debate in 2013 with respect to shark fins, there was a poll that said 81% of Canadians polled support the legislation. There was a poll in 2015 with respect to the criminal code that said 92% of Canadians support strengthening the criminal code with respect to animal cruelty provisions. And I have to admit surprise that there wouldn't be a willingness from the opposition to work with me when I've said to them, if you have specific concerns, I'm willing to work with you. I'm willing to change certain language if there's legitimate legal counsel that have come back and raised these concerns. I'm open to change because this bill is not intended to affect generally accepted practices like farming, hunting, trapping, etc. So come back to me with changes. And they've obviously determined that, you know, this is politics and they want to kill the bill regardless, and they'll say anything to do it. And I'll give you the easiest example. They've said that the criminal code changes will give animals the same rights as humans, which is just bizarre because it does no such thing. If anything, it's a pretty small change to our laws. And I'm, you know, for me, it was what first step can I take? That would be a good first step to bringing our animal welfare laws into the 21st century.
Great answer. Beck has a question for you here.
Hi, Nathaniel. This is Beck. It's really an honor to speak to you, and I've actually been pressuring my MP, Murray Rankin, to support your bill. How have you found that the public response is to this, to these changes that your bill proposes?
I have generally found the public to be very supportive. And so I think the real problem here is you have specific advocacy groups that have just decided they need to kill the bill, regardless of whether or not it affects them, because it doesn't affect these generally accepted practices, but they've taken upon themselves to say, no, it's a slippery slope. If we give any more protections to animals, you know, what will happen next? And so they've come out strongly against it. But that is not indicative of support across the country. And I have had conservatives write to me to say they support the bill. I've had NDP voters write to me to say that they support the bill. And when you look at the broad range of support, and I'll give you an example where I'm speaking to the Canadian Muslim Lawyers Association, and they're indicating that they're supportive. When I'm speaking to the Canadian Center for Abuse Awareness, which is normally been associated with conservative politics, and they're saying we will be supportive of this legislation. I really do think there's a good cross-section of Canadians that care about animal welfare. This does not need to be a divisive issue. It certainly doesn't need to be as divisive as my opponents have made it out to be thus far. And I'm hopeful that my colleagues, especially if there's that public pressure on my colleagues, that my colleagues will be supportive of the bill in the end.
And for anyone who's listening who's still skeptical about Bill C-246, what would you tell them? Why is it important for our country and the place that Canada plays in our society on a national level and worldwide?
So first, we have very poor, antiquated animal welfare laws. And I'll give you just one example with respect to, now my bill doesn't affect this, but I'll give you just one example with respect to transport of animals, that when you compare our legislation to the European Union's legislation, you can transport animals without food, water, or rest, certain animals, for over 50 hours. In the EU, they've got it at 8 hours. There's a major discrepancy there. With respect to the criminal code amendments, ours haven't been seriously updated in over 100 years. When you look at the shark fin piece, other countries are taking action, and we are lagging. When you look at the cat and dog fur piece, which I just don't understand how anyone could be opposed to it, we have the EU again and the U.S. that have taken action, and yet we haven't taken that action. So I think it's about updating our laws to bring them into the 21st century. It's about addressing the fair treatment of animals in our society. And I'm happy to say our government ran on a platform of fairness, and I'm hopeful that we'll continue that thinking through this legislation.
So I understand that there's going to be the first hour of debate on this bill on May 9th. That's coming up soon. Can you describe for our listeners what the next steps are now for Bill C-246 in general? What is the timeline like to have it approved and put into action? What's everything that needs to be done in order to get this passed?
Okay, so the first hour of debate happens on May 9th. There's another hour of debate in the fall. That after that second hour of debate, there will be a vote. And in order to get to committee, we need to win that vote. And if we're successful on that vote, it will get sent to committee. And at that, the committee will study the language, and they will have expert testimony to assess whether, in fact, there are unintended consequences and problems. And, in fact, just to pause here, this is exactly what I've told my colleagues, and I've told even my conservative opponents, to say, stand down right now. You're not worried about the three principal elements of the bill. You're not worried about my intentions. That if you really think the three objects are legitimate, let's pass this at second reading. Let's send it to committee, because right now you're worried about unintended consequences, and that's exactly what committee is for. That if amendments are going to be proposed and accepted, that'll happen at committee. And as I've already said, I'm certainly open to having that reasonable debate. If we're successful at second reading, if committee comes back and makes small changes or accepts it as is, it will then come up for a third vote. And after, if we're successful at that third reading vote, it will then go to the Senate before it becomes law.
And can you just give us maybe a rough idea on if it did become law? Right now it's April 2016. When would we be seeing that?
Good question. So I think there's the opportunity for it to pass the House sometime in early 2017, and it could very well pass the Senate, if all goes well, by the end of the year or sometime in 2018. As far as what I think you'd ask what listeners can do to help.
Absolutely. Next question, what can listeners do to help get this bill passed?
Exactly. So the most important thing, and I'm glad I'm glad one caller already said we've contacted local MP Murray Rankin. So Murray's supportive. That's fantastic. Right now, because the most important thing is getting my colleagues on side, it's contacting the Justice Minister, because she will have a great deal to say about this legislation. It's contacting the Prime Minister. So when you contact your local MP to CC the Justice Minister and to CC the Prime Minister, and to let them know how important this is to get this bill passed. And to write to your local MP, but also to call and set up meetings with your local MP. And the best thing to do is to, if there are a group of constituents, say four or five, whether it's a small group or a big group, set up a meeting with your local MP to really express in person how important this bill is.
I'm just curious, given the time constraints that people have, and I'm hearing and reading a lot about, like, contact your local MP. As an MP yourself, when someone comes to speak to you about an issue that's important to them, or say there's a pending bill in process and someone were to have a meeting with you, what do you as an MP take from that to then move it forward into whatever feedback you're getting from your people who you're representing?
So in this case, if there was another private member's bill and people were raising it, I'm going to ultimately vote on other individuals' private members' bills as well. And if there was a number of people that have contacted me about an issue, I would look at the issue in depth. I would certainly make sure that I take those voices into consideration in making my decision. And I think that's the most important part, because a lot of my colleagues, whether they're Liberal, Conservative, or NDP, they're hearing from me that this bill is important and that it does these three specific and achievable things and that it's not going to affect hunting, fishing, farming, etc. But you also have my colleagues hearing from the other side, and it's very important for them to hear from their constituents specifically. And what I think would be especially useful, so it's good to contact them on your own if that's the extent to which you've got time. People are busy. If it's a simple letter or email, so be it. If someone's got more time and wants to set up a meeting, that's great. And the other thing is to come with a group as much as possible, have a sit-down, because that is by far the most effective. If you have a group, or if you come as a group and you say, and here are a number of signatures from other individuals in the riding who are supportive of this. Because as soon as there is, we receive emails every day on different topics, but it's very rare to receive a lot of correspondence on one particular topic, and that my colleagues will pay attention to if they receive it.
Wow, that's so helpful. Thank you for coming on the show today, Nathaniel, to speak about Bill C-246, the Modernizing Animal Protections Act, which is to have its first hour of debate in Canadian Parliament on May 9th. To find out more about the bill, please go to our website, animalvoices.org. You'll find a lot of information there. Thank you, Nathaniel, and have a great day.
Thanks so much.
You have been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us on our next show next Friday, April 22nd. It's our Earth Day show.
Yay, can't wait for our annual Earth Day show.
Yay! We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Animalvoices.org is where you can stream shows or download the shows as podcasts, which I do every night, read our show blog with detailed links, and subscribe via iTunes. Stay in touch with us via our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at AnimalVoicesYVR. You can also send us your suggestions and comments about the show, either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Just a reminder that it's our annual spring member drive now here at Co-op Radio, and we need your support. If you would like to make a tax-deductible donation to help keep Animal Voices on the air, you can either give us a call now at 604-684-8494, and Allison will directly answer your call.
If you call in 5 minutes.
5 minutes.
Still busy.
Or go to coopradio.org to donate. Just make sure you indicate Animal Voices in your donation. We thank you so much for your support. We're closing the show now with a piece called Change, Change by Thistle. The theme of today's show was making change for the animals. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. And thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today. And remember to be kind to the animals.